Hi everybody, I'm John Atack and my faithful assistant Spike Robinson is with me today. We have been stirred to make this recording by a case currently exploding into the media in Utah, which involves a woman called Ruby Frankie, who used to run a YouTube channel called Eight Passengers, which had about 2 million subscribers. And she's called Eight Passengers because it's her, her husband, and their six children. Now, she threw her husband out 13 months ago, and he claims innocence about any of the events that have occurred. But what's happened is that her 12-year-old son crept out of the basement of the house where it appears he was being imprisoned, and pleaded with the neighbor for food and drink. The neighbor called the police and said, have this emaciated 12-year-old who has duct tape on his wrists and has marks from having been bound on his legs as well. So this leads us to the subject of child abuse in cults and to what extent we should be pressuring government and local agencies to take more action and have more concern. In this case, the group involved is the Latter-day Saints, much more commonly referred to as the Mormons. And tell us about, because this was the house of her friend,
her friend?
And when they got there, they found there was also a 10-year-old girl who was being apparently held captive.
His younger sister. It's her friend and business partner, Jody Hildebrandt. She stopped the Eight Passengers after, I think shortly after or shortly before breaking up with the husband, and has been working with her partner, Jody Hildebrandt, doing this marriage and addiction, and we'll round back to that in a moment, therapy program called Connections, spelled with an X.
Misspelled with an X.
Misspelled with an X. Now, I have been doing some, admittedly not as thorough as I'd like, research, but pretty widespread. And it seems that in this Connections program, masturbation, even if you're doing it only once a month, is viewed as an addiction. Porn, even if you're just looking at Playboy for the articles, is an addiction. And the wives have been reportedly, and if somebody knows differently, please correct us, told to withhold sex, affection, and even their presence from their husbands if they engage or fall off the wagon, as it were. Yeah, so you just masturbated, no sex for you. It's like, going on and how absolutely... And so that is one of the things. Also, due to this parenting style, Jody Hildebrandt has been recorded making extremely homophobic, transphobic, even racist rants. Her basic style is that anything that falls away from her expectations is a choice that you've made, and you should buck it up, and traditional therapists just coddle their patients. It's a very tough love, but conditional love situation that's going on here. I'll link also, there's a heartbreaking, and I do mean heartbreaking, interview with Dr. John DeLynn of Mormon Stories Podcasts, interviewing the niece of Jody Hildebrandt, a young person who is now a tattoo artist somewhere up in the Pacific Northwest, who had also been duct taped and left to sleep on a sleeping bag on a tiny little porch in the Utah winter. And it gets cold out there.
And how, And we've heard that in Eight Passengers, she talked about making, I think her oldest son, sleep on a beanbag a bed.
And yes,
for about a year.
I'm not sure it was that long, but it was pretty long. And it was because he had been pranking his kids Then there was one where she was taking away Christmas from the 8-year-old, I believe, and one of the other younger children. And what she was going to give them was the gift of truth reflected back to them as to how their quote unquote egregious behavior had been affecting the family. Now, these are kids. They're still learning how to deal, but a lot of it seems to be there's two big words in Jody Hildebrandt's dictionary, and that is truth and distortion. And anything that doesn't align with her very narrow worldview of how men and women should behave, and that's very quote unquote traditional values, is in delusion. And if you don't do, or I'm sorry, not delusion again,
Distortion.
distortion, and you can't, anything that has to do with anything that she doesn't accept is distortion. So that if you're believing that it's okay to masturbate, that's distortion. If you believe that you're gay, that's distortion. She compared at one point in one video, I'll see if I can try to link it, homosexuality to having intercourse with an anthill or to the ground, I believe it was.
I should think having intercourse with an anthill could be quite painful, actually.
Know. Yeah.
But
I don't think it
I'm
was
not
an
going to try
anthill.
it, I can tell you that.
It was the ground, but the whole thing of taking things away from children, another case. And by the way, people have been noticing there have been petitions going around for years now. Check this family out for child abuse. And one of them was her 6-year-old daughter, who's supposed to be able to make her own lunch. I don't know of a six. I wasn't able to make my own lunch at six. I mean, I might have slapped some peanut butter on some bread, but you'd help
No,
a child
I
make
started
lunch.
cooking when I was 8, so I'd probably been able to make some fairy cakes for my lunch by then, but
Yeah,
I
but
think I was an exceptional 8-year-old. I think it's usually
so
more
you're
like
just exceptional,
9, you know.
John. Yeah. But in any case, this young kid forgot her lunch. And supposedly, according to her mother, said, well, she said she had it ready and it's her responsibility. And then is taped in her car saying, my kid's teacher just called me. She's hungry. She doesn't have a lunch. I hope no one else steps up to give her some food.
I mean, I saw a news piece that where Ruby Frankie had said that the conditions with which she treats her kids are because when one of them, and she's not saying which one, was 3 years old, they're exposed to pornography, and since then have been abusing their siblings. Now, we haven't heard anything about this in her various broadcasts before. She's therapy for couples when her own husband is out of the house, reducing them to 7 passengers from 8. I mean, and looking at the
When
little
she's not
clips
a
I've.
therapist, she's a licensed coach. Jody Hildebrandt is sadly a therapist. And I will break in here and say, here's the really scary, horrible thing, is that she is the go-to family therapist for high-level Mormons in the Salt Lake City area. If one of their apostles needs some help, she's the one they recommend. So many people have been writing in to Mormon Stories, and I'll put a link to that, saying she wrecked my marriage, and it was because our bishop recommended her to us. And she will, and Jody Hildebrandt will encourage the women to push their husbands away completely.
Yeah, we come to a fundamental problem. You corrected me when I said that some time ago that Voltaire had said that when people believe absurdities, they will commit atrocities, and you referred me to a website which shows that he didn't actually said that. He made a much more complicated statement than that, in French, which makes it even worse. But
It's more simple. Le français, c'est plus simple d'anglais.
yeah, and lots of ION words that today you can't remember. They all come from French. But instruction, désolation, they're all French. So it's, oh dear, we're what's that thing? This is cultural appropriation. We must stop using all ION words and give them back to the French. But we have this situation where you have a group of people who have absurd beliefs. They have beliefs that are at odds not only with the society around them, but with the laws of the society around them. So in the United States, you also have, for example, the 12 tribes who beat their children with paddles, the Jehovah's Witnesses, who actually, if a child makes a noise during a service in a kingdom hall, they'll be taken into a back room and beaten so the congregation can hear their cries. I found that hard to believe, but I've now talked with enough former members to know that this is so. So this punitive attitude in Scientology, of course, you have the very strange belief that you are a fully competent being from the moment of birth. And that whatever you do, you are deciding to do. You're a thetan. Now, I'm going to give an example of extraordinary child abuse that occurred because of this idea. I'm going to name the person because he's dead now, but a man called Lensworth Small, who was a lawyer running his own law firm, he was a Scientologist, a very dedicated Scientologist. And when his wife, who's a friend of mine, was not at home one night, and their 3-year-old daughter started to bang her head against the wall and cry out, he let her. He didn't go because she was deliberately being bad. She managed to incur brain damage in consequence. And so poor Fiona Small lived another 11 years. She died at the age of 14. She was not able to communicate. She was retarded. She was retarded because of a belief, because her own father did not go and attend to her and comfort her. And seeing that attitude, I mean, this week I've talked with a young man who would rather remain nameless. He's not a young man anymore. I first met him in 1983 when he appeared at my doorstep, because his stepfather had said, if you want to leave Scientology, you can stay overnight there and then get the train home. And on my doorstep was a 14-year-old who told me that he was the second in command for Scientology in the UK. He had a staff of more than 200 people. And when I suggested to him that he was a little bit young to have such a responsibility, he said, oh no, there are kids. There are 12-year-olds who are actually telling adults off for their sexual activities. 12-year-old comes in, tells you shouldn't have been doing that. So, you know, this peculiar idea about the responsibility of a child, I believe that you're born, I'm pretty sure, I've got four kids, you're born absolutely dependent. You know, you can't feed yourself, you can't move around, and you have to wear diapers. And for me, from that age up to when you achieve your majority, whether that's age 18, 21, or whatever, I tend to think that adulthood in human beings begins somewhere at about 35, but which is the old Roman view, by the way. But what you should be doing is giving more and more responsibility and helping the child to understand. Now, what we see here is, you know, firstly, how on earth was a 3-year-old watching pornography? What kind of responsible parent puts a child in that situation ever?
Or even if the child was watching pornography, how would that child understand that this is a sexual act, even comprehend what a sexual act is? If anything, a 3-year-old would probably go, those adults are fighting, or those adults are wrestling, or just see a bunch of colors and on the screen and go, boy, they're wake making some weird noises.
Absolutely. So, you Yeah, and you know, unless you're Sigmund Freud and believe that year-old babies are trying to seduce their parents, and I don't believe that. This goes off into the area of crazy. We have a set of absurdities. Watching Ruby Frankie in her, you know, various little film clips I've seen, she has that bright look that I associate with people who are dishonest.
Yeah, they all had that bright big smile.
And
I will say that there's also the thing that, you know, that there can be cults within cults that are more controlling.
yes.
Because I know some Mormons out here, and they are not under the control of the temple and lead normal lives and believe normal things. It's all a matter of gradations with a lot of the bigger ones. And I think that the Connections Camp is a cult within a bigger organization, and it's much more controlling when you get into that little Jody Hildebrandt cult. And Ruby Frankie was definitely a member of, is probably still in her mind, a member of the Jody Hildebrandt cult, or they're a folie à deux doing this to each other. I haven't dug bit deep enough to say, but there seem to be little puddles of it.
As you say, it fits in with Steve Hassan, our friend Steve Hassan's influence continuum,
Exactly.
that the closer you get to the center of the group, usually the more
Exactly.
strange things become. And here we are seeing a woman, two women who've actually been advocating what you and I would consider to be child abuse for years. The organization that should be giving the moral guidance, and you know, if there is a function for religion in our society, it is surely that, to provide moral guidance. Now, we've seen that failure. We've seen it in the Catholic Church, just unbelievably. You know, 500 priests charged with 8,000 assaults in Australia alone. Portugal this year has, earlier in the year, released a report about the predation of clergy.
Link in
But
description below.
we've also seen that in the Anglican Church, in the Methodist Church, in the Baptist churches, and of course in the Jehovah's Witnesses. And the Mormons, like the Jehovah's Witnesses, refuse to hand over information about these criminal acts to law enforcement, to actually allow law enforcement to get access to these records.
There's a big battle that in Utah right now to make them mandatory reporters, which I think is like the bottom line expectation that if you work with people and you hear about child abuse, you should be governmentally mandated to report it to someone, anyone. That should be the like the bottom line barest expectations. And yet they're That's there's a clergy exception. I don't
I
know
mean,
if it's Mormons or everybody in Utah.
I absolutely don't take Scientology's position that you know, you're born cognizant and responsible for what happens to you. But on the other hand, I do take the position that children should have the same benefits of law that adults have. And so,
Protection, sure, surely.
I have four kids, all of them now adult. For the most part, in as much as I am myself, but I never hit one of my children. I never felt the need to hit one of my children, and I know that with my own mother, I'm the youngest of four, and all three of my brothers were smacked, and they probably deserved it, knowing them. You know, no, it's not true. They're wonderful people. I was never hit as a child. Because when one of my brothers went to my mum and said, "Why don't you hit him?" She said, "He hasn't done anything." I was a very good, obedient child. It didn't last, obviously, but when I was little. And I think it did make a difference. You know, when I went to school, and you know, there I was hit only twice in the years I went to school, but it was such a shock to find myself in a place that wasn't safe. where irrational events were taken out on me with shouting on many occasions and being struck on two occasions, when I was six and when I was 13. And it makes you, it separates you from the group. It means that you become hypervigilant. You know, you've got a kind of little bit of PTSD going on there. And so seeing that this is a regular way of treating people. And what my mother said to me when we talked about this many years later was, and she actually took part in a report on the child and the young offender when she was sat on the city council in the town where I grew up. So she had some view of this. And when she talked about having smacked my brothers, she said that she always realized that it was because she'd lost control. It was because she was not providing the right guidance for my brothers, you know, to improve their behavior. They all did improve their behavior, I'm happy to say. But so this idea of violence against children, and then when we get to taking their beds away and punishing them, this again throws us into something like the Scientology's Rehabilitation Project Force, where you just give ever more severe penalties. Ultimately, of course, in Scientology, this led to the death of Lisa McPherson, where she was tied down and died from dehydration while under the care of David Miscavige and his cohorts. This idea that the more you brutalize somebody, the more likely it is that they will reform, is an incredibly stupid idea.
It is. And I just had the thought that this is what must lead to the idea that the person who can beat the bejeebers out of you is somehow right. Hmm. You see it in every superhero movie. Every war movie, it's might makes right. The person who can brutalize the most and hit and subdue the person must be the person on the right side. And I think that's where it starts, is a child is beaten by their parents and corrected and made to apologize for this brutality, because let's not forget that then the kid has to think about what they've done and apologize to the parent after they've been brutalized. And it leads to this, you know, two grown millionaires, we won't mention names, challenging each other to a cage match.
Yeah, man passes misery on to man, it rises like a coastal shelf, in the words of Philip Larkin.
Thank you.
And I think we do. I think by passing trauma on from one generation to the next and then grinning about it, as Ruby Frankie does, that we fail to understand, you know, that the Mormons are a sort of splinter group from Christianity, a serious splinter group, because of course they have their own scriptures. But nonetheless, I'm an agnostic, as you know, but nonetheless, it seems to me, when I look at the Gospels, that this is meant to be a gospel of love, of care. You know, when Jesus says, you know, how many times do you turn the other cheek? A seven and even 70 times seven is what he says.
But yet we have this strict.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, spare the rod, spoil the child.
Yeah.
And that's in there too. Or I come not in peace, but with a sword, I believe. There's one line that.
Yeah, I come to set father against son. I'm going to separate the wheat from the chaff. There are some pretty nasty lines in there.
As if it wasn't written by one person.
And it was written long after the events, you know, even though we're only dealing with, you know, tens of years after the events, nonetheless. And it was written, you know, this is another whole subject, but the Gospels, particularly the Synoptics, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, are written with the idea of fulfilling prophecy. So stories that have been told in the Torah, the Pentateuch, the Old Testament, are now fitted to their Jesus, who was not only a Jew, by the way, but worshipped in the temple, and his followers, the Nazarenes, worshipped in the temple too, for anybody who's feeling anti-Semitic. But it is such, you know, I think we have lived through millennia of tyranny. That's the human condition, being ruled by monarchs who, you look at any one of them and they're capricious and tyrannical. Even the ones that seem nice, like say Ashoka, who brought Buddhism to all of India, having followed his father and conquered the lot of it. But he maintained a secret police despite having brought Buddhism, you know, so tyranny has not been helpful to humanity. And this idea of electing tyrants, putting people into positions where they can fulfill their authoritarian dreams, which very often consist of, you know, taking away the rights of women. You know, I live in a country that only, you know, until the end of the 19th century, legally, women were chattels. They were movable goods. And you could take your wife to the marketplace right into the 20th century and sell her.
Do you know what year it was when women could, in this country, could get a credit card of their own without their husband's permission?
Was it 2022?
No, but it was within my lifetime, 1972.
Hmm. Yeah.
And I forget, but it's not so long ago that we were not considered chattels here either.
Hmm. And I mean, if you look then to the position of the Native Americans, is that the right expression? Am I allowed to say that?
Actually, if you go to somebody who's actually one of the Native Americans, they call themselves Indians because it's shorter and that's what they've gotten used to. But even they don't agree. That's the thing. Mm. So that it becomes, well, what shall I call you? And I call them Native Americans because that's what I was raised to think was respectful. And I want to be respectful.
And exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly what I seek to do. In Canada, they're being called First Nations people. Of course,
which
in
I
Australia,
like.
They're called Aborigines, which is an accurate term, but has come to represent the natives of Australia rather than Aborigine, which means, well, native. But that in 1876, there was a law passed in Congress, which reduced all Native Americans to the status of children,
mm-hmm.
of court. And it was only in the 1920s they became citizens. So we've seen these oppressive ideas, which, you know, and the Mormons, of course, in their past have the guilt of having massacred people, among them Native Americans, long time ago. But
not admitting black people to the clergy because of that Mark of Cain / people of mud doctrine that's been tucked nicely under the carpet.
Yeah, I mean, in the Book of Mormon, there is a passage which I believe was only moved out in the 1960s. I cited it elsewhere. Again, saying that you know, black people can't be among the elect. You know, the Jehovah's Witnesses had a similar idea. Mm-hmm. If we are to move into a secular society where, you know, people actually have rights and children have rights, we have to get rid of these old-fashioned, unuseful, anti-human ideas.
Well, also the idea that somehow being horribly strict to a child, being cruel to them to be kind, teaching them our values by pushing them down, teaching the value of responsibility to a child, to a six-year-old, by starving her. There's another really chilling one, I don't know if you saw it, where Ruby Frankie is standing fully clothed in her shower. One of the daughters has said that she has blurry vision and needs to go to the hospital. And since my cataract surgery, I've heard that sudden blurry vision is something that you do need to go to the hospital right away for.
Of course.
But she says, well, give me an hour, and then is standing, filming herself in her shower, fully clothed, going, well, I'm just waiting here. I'm gonna let her wait. With the same cheerful grin. Yeah. Also, the idea of children as pawns, as soldiers. Now, I can understand that developmentally or evolutionarily speaking, we're just only coming out of a place where before we got medicine, what percentage of children actually lived to adulthood? It
Well,
was,
before Semmelweis got his
yeah.
point over that doctors ought to wash their hands before.
It's pathetic. It's like, oh my God, what grief. I've never had children, but I can't even imagine losing a child, even very young. It would be heartbreaking. I mean, my heart breaks every time one of my parakeets passes on, and they only live 8 to 13 years. So that's, but to see that these children are somehow expendable, they're tools, they're extensions of the parents in the quiverful movement. You have lots of them because that's what you have to do. And the older ones are immediately put in as the caregivers of the younger ones. And particularly if they're female, it's just expected you're going to be second mommy or even primary mommy to all the younger ones that mom pops out. And if she doesn't have a baby at least every year and a half, something's wrong. She's in sin. And they're raising these children for God. They're, in their own words, raising an army for God. And a lot of, and to simply go, well, we can't afford children is to lack faith in God.
Cannon fodder for God.
Oh, so yeah, but the view of children as products for God, as these are your property.
I mean, one of the most curious documentaries I've ever seen was about a reform school in England called Pepper Harrow. That's a single P in the middle, Pepper Harrow. And the original film was made in the 1970s. And what appeared to have happened was that a bunch of hippies had set up a reform school. And I was a little surprised by this film because one of the things that particularly surprised me, there was an 8-year-old kid walking around smoking a cigarette with nobody telling him not to, which I think is probably a little too liberal, even for my way of thinking. But they then went back some years later, maybe 20 years later or something, and filmed again. And the first thing they pointed out was that Pepper Harrow had a reoffence rate of 10%. They then interviewed, I think, four of the six children who'd been in the original. One had died, of the six had died, and another didn't want to be filmed. And they found that there was a kid who at 14 was in there. He could not read and write. He was the youngest of four kids, all with different dads, and he was going out stealing to feed his siblings and his mum. And he got caught and sent to Pepper Harrow. Now, we see him later on in life, and he's actually the top man in the childcare system in a county in England. And that, so there's what happened. Treating these kids with tremendous tolerance and care, that there were no punishments of the of you know they were not being confined, they were certainly not being beaten, they were not being shouted at, so they were kindly treated. By comparison, the Margaret Thatcher's government under a man called William Whitelaw introduced what he called the short, sharp shock. Which is a quotation from the Mikado by Gilbert and Sullivan and actually means execution, but he thought it was funny to apply it in this way. Under the short, sharp shock regime, which is a version of the American brat camp or troubled teen industry, which we have a video going up about, under that system, the reoffence rate went to 80%. So you kind of go, so by brutalizing kids, we know it's the evidence is there, it doesn't work. Again, with, was it Mendota? We always have trouble Mendota, with this one.
Yeah, we always forget the name and I have to look it up fresh and everything.
But I think we've got it now, finally. That they did a study, it's a reform school, and they did a study of kids who had the normal treatment in reform schools and kids who were treated with tremendous, you know, they had counsellors and there were a bunch of murders from the control group and none in the kids who've been treated, which starts to say that, you know, as you know, at the moment, as everybody who's watching the channel knows, I am totally embroiled in the life and times of Charles Manson. And I didn't intend to be. It was accidental, you know, because my friend Jolly West, my late friend Jolly West, was accused of having in some way brought the Manson family into being as a part of the CIA's MKUltra operation, which is nonsense. But it suddenly I found myself looking at Manson and going, why aren't people talking about his profound involvement with Scientology? Mm-hmm. You know, 54 years later, why aren't they talking about that? And in studying his life and finding out the childhood he had, you know, I mean, the book I'm writing provisionally, the first chapter is called A Bad Child, Badly Treated. You know, he does not seem to have ever been anything but a conniving, self-centered individual.
Do you think some people are just born that way?
Well, psychopathy is an innate condition.
That's true.
Which is said to involve three alleles genetically, and a deficiency in the connection between the old brain and the prefrontal cortex. That's the thinking part of the brain. System is called the paralimbic system. And, you know, Kent Kiel has done lots of, I think he did more than 500 MRIs of psychopaths, finding that this connection was there. I think there's a bit more controversy about genetic alleles. I'm not sure that we're going to stick with that idea for much longer.
We can bring in James Fallon, who found out that he had those alleles, but had been raised by his mother very carefully so that he wouldn't.
Yeah, and he's very definitely, you know, a fascinating case. So you can be born with it, but always come back to Shakespeare. You know, some are born great, some achieve greatness, some have greatness thrust upon them. And I think it's the same with most conditions in human beings, that some things you're born into. But if you're during your infancy, during the first 5 years of your life, there is strong evidence that if during that period you are treated abusively, you're treated aggressively, you're not allowed to, there are no loving relationships in your life, that whether you were born with the condition or not, you will not trust people. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, cult members tend to be people who've been brought up to trust. They tend to be people who want to do good in the world. They tend to, you know, people who join cults, people are born into cults, you know, different situation. But
they're also taught to believe that the children are supposed to be used for the service of whatever the organization is to service of.
Yeah.
So,
so kids who are Jehovah's Witnesses will be sent out knocking on doors to make recruits.
Yeah, and
the Mormons will be sent away from home for 2 years and not allowed to contact their families during that period as missionaries. Utah and Arizona communities exchange people. We get American Mormons over here. And which seems to me remarkably cruel, you know, to take a child away, you know, a teenager away from familial connection.
Well, it's a control thing too. You're isolating them. They're also got a buddy that they can't get away from. And they're not allowed their traditional support system. It's like any abusive relationship. The first thing you do is take away the person's support systems. Mm-hmm. And then
isolation, dependency, and dread.
Exactly.
3-point model, yeah.
I want to ask you a question, though, because I'm sure that some other people will be going, oh, well, it's all very well and good to say don't beat the children and treat them kindly. However, I was at a store at one a long time ago, and there was this child running amok with a ski pole. It was a skiing store. We have skiing up here where I am. And he was running amok with a ski pole, waving it around and nearly poking it into people, knocking over displays. And all his parents were doing was sitting back going, "Now, Jason, we don't do that." So where is the balance? What do you do to keep the child from doing that other than grabbing and smacking, which I know is not right, but
Well, yeah, you restrain the child from doing harm. You take the ski pole away from them. And if they're old enough to talk about it, you talk about it. Now, I'll tell you something from my own life. My daughter, my lovely daughter, when she was seven, I think it would have been, we went into a Woolworths. Remember Woolworths?
oh, yes.
And yeah, long gone now, except for the Woolworth, wonderful Woolworth building in New York. What a great piece of architecture. But anyway, we were in a Woolworths, and she picked up a pair of adult high heels, which were, plastic Woolworths, sort of cheap, £5, and demanded that I buy them for her. And she then started crying. She sat on the floor, crying her eyes out, and I sat down with her. And of course, people who don't have children walk past tutting at me for being such a rotten parent.
You the stink
And
eye.
people who did have children gave me sympathetic looks. And I just waited until she'd stopped crying. And I said to her, "I will never buy you anything if you cry to get it. You have to ask me. And then I'll think about it." And the next day, she said, "Can I have that pair of shoes?" They were £5. So we went and bought them. What is interesting about this is from that day onward, she never had a tantrum with me. She
Interesting.
frequently had tantrums with her mother. And
Interesting.
so I think you have to lay down boundaries, and you have to keep your promises. If you say, "I'll kill you if you do that again," I'm afraid you have to kill the child, Just got to keep your
Break your
promises.
arm is
Yeah,
basically one.
just don't offer violence to children. Don't threaten them with that. And of course, you shouldn't be giving them treats. I mean, one of the errors I've often seen in child rearing is where a child is told they can't have something and then it's given to them. So be reliable in the way you treat your children, and always look to understand why they're behaving the way they're behaving. And of course you offer carrots, but carrots are not particularly liked by children, so that may not be the best. Good with donkeys though. But you don't need to offer the stick. You can take away privileges. We've come into a brave new world the way that the computer, particularly via the smartphone and the tablet, has changed society. I was talking with Hoyt Richards, a good friend Hoyt, last year, I think it was, and he was saying, "Are we coming to a point where we're going to be, cybernetically connected?" I'm like, "We already are, Hoyt."
Yeah, it's just not wound into our bodies, actual bodies yet.
Yeah, and I mean, there was a study where which was a study of advertising, in fact, and seeing what effect smartphones had on people. And one group of people had their smartphones taken away, and they were all being paid if they completed, I think it was an hour without their smartphones. They got something like $150. And this woman, after I think it was 11 minutes, came out of the room and said, "Give me my phone back, give me my phone back." So we see people becoming dependent upon these devices. And we do see the interference that has with parenting,
Yeah, totally guilty. I'm addicted to this stupid game on my smartphone. And I was just thinking, you couldn't take it away from me for any amount of money during the 3 day stretch that one of these this game has events that you have to keep playing during this 3 day stretch. Nope, sorry, don't take it away from me. The other thing that I was thinking is, should we at this point bring up Judy from the Righteous Gemstones? We're going to be doing a show on the Righteous Gemstones at some point. And John made me get HBO.
Forced you. How much is it costing you? It's a
Actually,
fortune,
no,
isn't it?
thank you so much, because I've been watching all of South Park again and also several movies that I'd
Well, you've got
forgotten.
the White Lotus is on there,
I haven't seen
Succession.
that yet, but I'm going to. But
Unbelievable.
Judy is almost always ignored by her parents and yet always allowed to just throw these massive, massive tantrums. And the first episode, you feel kind of sorry for her because the guys have gone off to
To
China,
China,
and she
yeah.
comes back going, "Well, I wasn't allowed to go." And her brothers are going, "Yeah, because it's man's work." And then
Yes.
later on in the series, I turned to Wally, my dear husband, and said, "Well, of course they didn't take Judy to China, because the minute somebody told her no, it would have been a freaking diplomatic incident. This woman, as soon as she's told no, punches, kicks. There's one scene where she breaks the door of a bus just because it didn't open for her fast enough."
Yeah, what's called oppositional behavior by some psychiatrists, and is seen as depressage, sociopathy, or psychopathy in later life. And again, with Charles Manson, look, we have access to his juvenile records, and the number of people who said he just can't do as he's told. He
Oh.
has to do something else. He is in opposition, which frankly, given the vicious way he was treated, he was bloodied and beaten in a Catholic reform school at the age of 12, and it just carried on from there.
Though I did want to get back to Judy, that the ignoring her is another form of child abuse. Just the pushing her aside, was it because she was a girl or was it because she was difficult? I still haven't figured out.
Yeah, I mean, they're all pretty difficult one way or another, the Gemstone children. But one's heart goes out to poor John Goodman, who, as well as in playing a total con man who's bilking people of their money, also has these awful children, but so it goes. Yeah, we see it all around us. So I think the thing is, the takeaway, as Americans say, to us that's food. But the takeaway from this, takeout to you, takeaway to us.
Take out, yeah.
Takeaway, the takeaway is that we should all, I think, as members of society, feel responsible for children, the children of our society. An example for me, this has not happened recently, because I don't go to the big city all that much. But it used to be that there'd be some mother with a 3-year-old. And the mother would say, "Well, I'm going now if you don't want to come with me." And I would find myself between the cars and the child walking towards the mother to make sure that the child didn't go into the road. And it shocked me that there could be anybody who didn't realize that if a car hits a child, and when I was a kid, my best friend's little brother twice walked in front of vehicles. I think he did a lot more damage to the vehicles than to himself. He was a very sturdy young man. But this is not a good situation. And the thought that you don't love your child enough to protect them from potential immediate harm, that your level of exasperation has risen so high. And the way that people will shout at their children using words that the children can't possibly understand, concepts that are beyond them, it shocks me. So we should care for our children, and if we suspect that abuse is taking place, we should report it.
Oh yeah, I think every one of us should be mandated reporters. Or, I mean, like I said, I don't have children, but there's right now a whole wad of I don't know why there's only one girl and about 17 gazillion boys in my neighborhood right now. But that's the way it is. And right beyond this door here is a very narrow very steep dirt path that goes up to our community pool that the boys like to play and use their bike, that crash their bikes down. And a little while ago, I heard, meaning, and you better damn well bet I ran outside.
Of course.
And they looked at me and they were kind of scared. And the first thing, words out of my mouth is, nobody's in trouble. I just want to make sure that you're okay. And as it turned out, there was a skinned knee. And I told the kid, go back to your parents and ask for a Band-Aid. But as far as I'm concerned, you're all right. And you have now learned the lesson why you don't ride down that hill at breakneck speed.
Yeah, I mean, the simplest of concepts is, you know, we can be asocial and do nothing. We can be antisocial and cause harm to others. We can be pro-social. And my experience of life and my contentment in life, and I am, the age of 68, a fairly happy person. My contentment in life is in the positive relationships that I have with other people. And you do that by being positive in your relationship to other people, you know, by going, yeah, it's the middle of the night and I wish you hadn't called me, but can I help? You know,
Yeah, exactly.
so if anybody's thinking of calling me, I'm not releasing my number. And I switch my phone off. So.
Well, the other thing is the fact that in certain religions, children are also viewed as willful and needing to be punished in order to be good, but also that the faith has said, like, take Jehovah's Witnesses and shunning your children.
Yeah,
I have
I've
heard
met
of
with that so many times, and
so
it
many
always
sad
staggers me.
that the parent will say, well, actually, in the new system, that is their version of paradise, God will provide me another child and I will forget about you. Or our friend Catherine Spolino, who wrote the excellent book Bad Cadet, who is a
Excellent book, yeah.
survivor of Scientology, she feels the reason that her parents are okay with having cut her out is because they're these immortal beings that will live for trillions of years and have had billions of children before and will have billions of children afterwards. And what is one child out of that?
Yeah. And, you know, for anybody who's religious who's watching and who thinks that they're going to escape this rotten life into a wonderful life, well, okay, maybe. I don't think so. I think this is not a rehearsal. I think this is actually reality that we're in. And it means that we should do the best we can, because putting aside the selfish individualism of going to heaven or being reincarnated or what have you,
And laughing
and
at all the
suggest,
people who are in hell.
yeah. So I mean, it used to be that they're revealing apocalypses that are painted. And apocalypse, I found this out the other day. It means revelation, but it's come to mean something rather nasty. But a lot of English churches, the paintings were painted out, whitewashed over after the Puritans took over in the 1640s. And some of these are being restored. And I thought at first that they exist to scare parishioners into behaving in a moral way so that they'll go to heaven. But that's not what they're there for. They're there so that the parishioners who have rotten lives can gloat about what will happen to the other people when they die. And I don't think that's a very Christian idea.
Well, that's the one thing that Jehovah's Witnesses actually do have that's positive is they don't believe in hell.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah,
But
if
on
you
the
were
other
to
hand,
spin
only
that, it's...
144,000 of the elect will go to the proper paradise,
and the
and
rest
that's
of
a little
us
bit
will live
confusing.
on Earth. Yeah. And also have to clean away all the bodies. And also, I've heard from many of them that they would go and they'd look at a nice house and go, after Armageddon, that's going to be my house. You just have to go and clean away the bodies. Whoa, it's
Looking forward to that.
even King's the Stand all over again.
So if there is eternity, then there's an eternal now. And as I say, putting aside selfish individualism, if we believe that we are part of the tapestry of humanity, rather than being so important that we'll live forever, and that we are there vital. What we do, what we think, what we say is vital to the future of humanity, for every one of us, every one of us. And that means living a virtuous life for the sake of the smugness that it gives you to say, yeah, I've been virtuous. But for the sake of the greater society, of humanity. And we don't think that Ruby Frankie's made a very good job of it. And I hope that whatever it is, I hope that her children will receive help.
Well, there was the thing is that the girl, it took her several hours while she's starving and wrapped up and beaten, took her several hours to accept medical help because she did not believe she deserved it.
Yeah, it's like one of the prostitutes who was in the Chinese thought reform camps when they were first started around about 1950. And they were meant to treat these people kindly, and I think they often tried to. And after this guy was trying to get her to tell him about herself, and she was completely silent. She wouldn't respond to him. And eventually she burst out and she said, look, you're wrong. The reason that I'm a prostitute is nothing to do with the society and where we live, the situation in which I was born. It's my bad karma. I deserve this.
Yeah.
So when you have a belief that's of that kind, you know, as in Scientology, the idea that you pulled in anything bad that happens to you, and it's because of Ron Hubbard, anything good that happens to you, we start getting into this, you know, the just world idea that bad things only happen to bad people. And, you know, and I think it's pretty obvious looking at Genghis Khan, Hitler, Mao and Stalin, that bad things don't all that readily happen to bad people. They would not have lived as long as they did if that were the truth. So, you know, it's up to us. It's up to us to be responsible.
I will link Jody Hildebrandt's niece's talk with Dr. John DeLynn here, because they, pronouns are them, they, said that for a very long time, they felt as if they were responsible for,
which is such a normal,
they were
trap.
The lowest, yeah. Horrible people. Also, I often wonder what happened to that four-year-old that went into the locker for, what was it, just tearing up some of L. Ron's scribblings or spilling ink?
I don't know, when you see a picture of what the chain locker was aboard Ron Hubbard's ship, and the idea that he would put this child of four in there for several days, screaming, whimpering, and crying, is just unconscionable.
Because it had chosen to do that. Yeah, I remember being a four-year-old and scribbling on paper because I liked to scribble on paper. It wasn't, but to carry that guilt, to be told, you are a horrible little cringy little thing. What is the what is that very famous sermon, sinners in the hands of an angry God? It's that paternal, you're bad, God is great, and the parents have to turn away from their own children in order to be good members of this group, because often the parents are so, call them brainwashed, call them under control, call them so tired that they can't even think straight themselves. They think that they're actually helping by doing this.
Yeah. I mean, and these aberrative systems teach them that, and they teach them, and here's the horror, to glory in hurt, to feel that, you know, righteousness about harming other people. And we have to be so careful about that. I was talking with Dr. Moffick the other day, and this will go up before that does. And we disagreed over the word hate, because I take the point of view that hate is a bad thing. and that's that. And he was sort of, well, but it can be right to hate something that's bad. And I said, well, that's, I'm going to separate that off, and I call that indignation, which I think is perfectly correct. I think hatred is a more primal instinct, that it, you know, and while we may dislike something and feel a dislike of it, a disgust of it, an aversion, we can then rationally consider it and take steps to do something about it. I feel that hate, we will tend, as these parents are doing with their children, to just strike out, to assert our authority and our righteousness without looking at the consequences of what we're doing, and without acting from a place of love, from a place of care.
But also
self-righteousness takes over.
Also the holding of violence as a threat to encourage correct behavior. But the idea that you can threaten somebody with the wooden spoon and this wooden spoon will be thwacking you, or making the child, this is one that I, a trope that I've heard about for a very long time, making the child go cut the switch that they will be beaten with, and that is somehow acceptable to encourage good behavior because I am able to hurt you, thus you must behave.
So we're against it, and
we're
think
against
that's probably what we'd like is if there are any Mormons out there, if there's somebody who's knowledgeable about this, I would love to talk with you and air that conversation so that we might better understand the details of what has happened here, and whether this is, I mean, as we've said, Hildebrand is the go-to counselor for the Mormon leadership. So, you know, anything more we can find out about that would be useful.
Dr. DeLynn actually did have a active Mormon therapist on his show. He actually talks with active believing Mormons, which I totally salute, because
yeah,
not all of them are hard. There's some lovely, wonderful, good, courageous people there.
Yeah.
And she was saying that she was running a therapy session and saying that now if you're a therapist, you have to, if somebody comes to you who's gay, you have to affirm, okay, it's all right to be gay. And some of the therapists were pushing back on that, going, well, then I can't be a Mormon and a therapist. She's like, no, you just have to put your faith aside and allow your patient to have the therapeutic space that it's okay for them to be gay. And that's totally separate from your belief as a Mormon.
Yeah. I became active in my annoyance against a Roman Catholic physician who had told a woman that she must not have a termination.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote to him and pointed out that it was not his right to say, and that as he had a religious belief, he should not impose that upon patients.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very much my perception. Also, you know, if I'm dealing with somebody who has a set of beliefs, then I expect them to act within that set of beliefs. So, you know, the famous therapist Rollo May, who gave us a form of therapy that basically it's, well, obviously you're in trouble because your worldview is wrong. Here's my worldview, and you just believe these sensible things, and called it existential therapy. And that is such an arrogant position to take, though Rollo May was a very intelligent man, that, you know, I've sorted the world out and everything. No.
That's the whole basis of this, though, is we have the answers and we've got to make these square children fit into a round peg somehow.
Or these round children fit into a square hole.
Square peg, yeah.
We're not going to fit them into the peg, Spike.
And
what can I say?
If they don't... Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
No, that's some comedy for us there, right there.
Well, I mean, like I'm wearing my Rubik's.
We can put that up as a short, you know.
I want to make a point is that I found the quickest way to solve the Rubik's Cube was to tear it apart and put it back together again. Now, that's not a way to treat
Well,
a human being.
yeah, actually, I had a young man who when I was away once, he took apart, he tore all the colored things off the Rubik's Cube and stuck them back in the right place, which is easier than tearing the cube apart, I think. So try
Oh.
that maybe. Or you could just get some paint, you know, do a
Or
quick job.
if you're really evil, you just change one of the stickers so that it can't be solved at all.
God, you are a bad person. What
I
can I
am a
say?
horrible person. But the point I'm making is that Terry Pratchett had this where he used to say, there's two kinds of people. The people who say, people are this way, how can we change them? Or the people who say, people are this way, how can we work with that?
Or where should we lock them up in some cases? But there we go. Anyway, this has been, it's not been fun, but it
No,
has been real,
it
and
has been real.
it has been interesting. So thank you very much, and we'll see everybody at the other side of the bridge. No,
No,
that's not
we
right, is
won't.
it?
I will say that I believe that if you're good and you help your fellow person and you do everything right, when you die, you get to be reborn as a cat.
With kindness as your king, you will enter heaven before you reach your end. Dave Matthews.
Fair enough.
Okay, thanks a lot, Spike.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, John here. Thanks for watching. We'd appreciate it very much if you would click like, as well as subscribe, and click the bell for notifications. Every dollar helps, and we welcome new patrons on Patreon, or you can make a one-off payment with any currency through PayPal. Thanks so much.
Looks
Looking forward to that.